welcome to another episode of the Menswear Style Podcast. I'm your host, Pete Brooker. On this episode, I'm going to talk to Paul Clapham, owner of Uskies. And Uskies, their background is in denim and casual clothing. And for many years, they had been selling other people's clothes. During that time, they had seen a change in the general relationship with clothing, a shift to a faster, quicker model built on ever-changing trends and cutting of corners. When the time eventually came to make their own range of clothing, they knew they'd want to do something different. And that time is now. From sourcing through to design, they use high-quality organic materials, putting a passion for craft at the center of everything they do. Traditional techniques are shown the respect they deserve, so that lessons of the past can be used to create something for the future. And they offer free repairs and maintenance to ensure that their products don't end up on the scrap heap. And you can find out more about Uskies through the website www.uskies.com. And here is Paul Clapham to tell the story of how it all began.
Yeah, so I've been in the retail arena for many years. You know, my first job was kind of working in jean shops, and I ended up working directly for Levi Strauss and managed a number of their biggest stores for a few years, and then went into internet retailing approximately 10 years ago and started a web store called Dungarees Online, which, you know, I had this light bulb moment in the shower one day. I wonder if I could sell denim dungarees on the internet. Imported some from America, sold one pair month one, that got returned, sold nothing month two, and then, you know, over time we built sales. And but it was always a kind of back bedroom business for a number of years. We eventually, you know, the internet business grew, became a full-time job, became a limited company. And we, like a lot of people, were happily trading away on our website. Then we got into Amazon and eBay and all the big marketplaces. And essentially, we became a buyer and seller of other people's clothing. So I used to buy a lot from wholesale and so on. And eventually, it just became a kind of a bit of a race to the bottom. Hard to compete. The marketplace got more and more flooded. So I began to think about how we can, you know, diversify and how we could, you know, survive in the longer term and how we could build something that was, you know, for us. And I'd always had we'd always sold brands like Carhartt and Dickies, more on the workwear side, through the Dungarees Online business. So I've always been familiar with workwear. And I kind of like the simplicity of it. I'm not particularly a high fashion person, you know, and I'm not a particular follower of huge, you know, big fashion or particularly trends. And that's what I always enjoyed about workwear, was the simple aesthetic of it. You know, it kind of fit my personality, the fact that I didn't have to think too hard, and I like the simplicity. So Uskies came from that, really. It came from a thought of creating something simple every day, something you could work in, or you could go for a beer in, or it was more around, you know, creating clothes that you could work or have fun in. That was the starting point.
Right.
We'd already done supply lines from India, and we'd been working with some organic cotton for some dungarees and so on we were doing. So I had the supply. And then one day I had a friend of mine working in the building who had on a very, very simple Chinese working jacket that he'd got from a vintage store. And it was, it wasn't particularly glamorous, but it was a really, really nice, simple cut overshirt. And as soon as I saw that, I thought, right, that's it. That's what we can do. We can create clothes that will be fit for purpose and simple. That was the kind of drive. And also, I'd begun to get a bit of an aversion. I mean, I'm we're based in Manchester, and one of the key areas of Manchester is huge clothing wholesale businesses, huge internet businesses, and I don't like the idea of disposable clothing, you know. I don't like the idea that things can be thrown away after a couple of uses. And I really wanted to try and see if we could create something that encouraged a more make, do, and mend attitude, really. And I think that comes from the fact that, you know, I worked in jeans stores and, like I say, for Levi's and so on. And clothes used to be a thing you save up for, you know, in the same way that a CD or an album was something you saved up for. And it represented value. And I liked, you know, the idea that you'd buy a pair of 501s or something and you'd have to save up for it. You would then take them home. You would then, you know, remove the packaging and plasters off the pockets and with great care, knowing that this garment had an inherent value to you. And the idea of fast fashion for me is a relatively new one. You know, I'm nearly 50 now, but, you know, the idea that you'd buy and throw away is a relatively new concept. And I wanted to try and rally against that and say, you know, buy less frequently. I don't want to go down the whole environmental argument because I don't think that's what I'm about particularly. I just wanted to create something that would encourage people to buy less, repair more, fix more, cherish more, and build a relationship with a garment. That's where it comes. Does that make sense?
It makes sense because, I mean, you're making the clothes, so you're kind of putting your heart and soul into the designs and making these clothes, and you kind of want to have that reflected with the consumer, I'm imagining. So you don't want to have to make something and then for someone else to wear it once or twice and then go, do you know what, the season's moved on, or I've had a change of heart and now it's time to wear something else. You kind of want to have them sharing the same enthusiasm for your products and your brand as I guess you have going into the brand yourself, right?
Yeah. For sure. And it's the important thing of value, you know. I think it's the important thing of just not disposing. You know, let's not dispose of everything we use so quickly.
Yeah.
And trying to get where you create favorite garments that grow old with you, you know.
Paul, talk to me. I mean, that's very true when you go on the website and for people that want to take a look at the brand, and I encourage you to do so. It's uskies.com. The subtext is all about kind of fighting that fast fashion, but doing it through looking after the clothes. And you have like things like free repair kits with every garment and a free repair service where clothes can be sent back to you. Do you mind just talking about that for a moment, please, how that process works?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think one thing I'm very keen not to be is an eco warrior, because I can't profess that we tick all those credentials. You know, I mean, I fly to India to meet the manufacturers. I there is travel. We do have to ship the garments on big cargo ships and all the nastiness that's that embroiled with that. The garments are still made, even though it's organic cotton, it's still cotton, which is an incredibly thirsty plant, you know. So I was very keen that we didn't try and become something that wasn't true, you know. I think and the idea with the repair kit was, you know, was to encourage the idea that, you know, it's a bit of clothing. Over time, if you wear it enough, there are things that are going to go wrong, you know, that maybe a button will come off. Maybe you'll tear it or snag it, or, you know, or maybe a seam would slightly loosen over time. So the idea with the repair kit was to say, look, it's something to help you maintain this garment. You know, so the and the repair service again was an idea that we said, right, well, we can fix things. You know, we can't make it new again, but we can certainly fix things. And I like the idea of that we could repair stuff and fix it and send it back out and you know, and I'm looking forward to that side of the business increase. It'd be interesting to see what sort of things come out of that. But to go to the just the sustainability side, you know, people use the word sustainable and let's be sustainable and sustainability and this is, and the reality, you know, the actual word sustainable means to replenish what you use. So we don't do that. You know, I don't replenish the resources that have gone into the manufacture of our garments. I can't say that. I can't even pretend to say that. And the term is misused a lot. So we wanted to encourage sustainability or practice sustainability through the idea of buy less, keep it longer, repair it. And that's how we wanted to interpret. So there is an environmental drive behind it, but it's not in the kind of in the arena of, you know, professing to be sustainable and so on, because we're just simply not, you know.
Money is all around us, and we think about it more than almost every other aspect of our lives. But how can we make more of it, and what's our drive for building wealth beyond just the numbers in our bank account? Join us on the Make More podcast as our host, Matt Heslin, brings to you a dynamic lineup of experts in the world of investing, business, health, and beyond. Together, they unpack the secrets to not just surviving, but thriving in today's economy. It's about more than just wealth. It's about crafting life experiences, seizing opportunities, and building a legacy. Subscribe now to the Make More with Matt Heslin podcast and join us every week for new expert insights and inspiration.
Paul, talk to me a little bit about some of the designs for the garments, please. When I was having a look across the clothes, obviously echoes of the workwear gear, but large patch pockets seem to be a theme. Fullness of cut, especially around the trousers. Can you talk to me a little bit about that and what you were thinking of when you were putting these together?
Yeah. I mean, simply with the trousers, is, you know, I've got a big ass pair of legs on the top of my thighs, and I wanted to make sure anything we did, I could get my legs into, because I've got quite big legs at the top. I'm not like Jonah Lumo or somebody, but I have got chunky legs. So that was that. That's the idea of the roomy space at the top of the pants. But the designs really were about. I mean, you know, there's some classics in there. The overshirts are, you know, they go hark back to the French workwear and so on. And those kind of boxy designs have been around a lot and interpreted a lot. So there's kind of nothing particularly new about some of the shirt designs, because they're classics. I think where I've tried to... the inspiration I've got for some of the, for example, the newer products, the blazers and so on, just goes back to the idea of the guys that would, you know, dig a road in a suit. The guys who would work in shipyards in a blazer. You know, we had, when I was a kid growing up, behind us was a small farm, small holding. It was, you know, we were quite, it wasn't a rural area, but it was, there was a guy who had a bit of root, and he couldn't have been more Yorkshire than you could ever imagine. This guy, it was difficult to understand he was that Yorkshire. And he used to come round with he'd come round in a blazer, a pair of wellies, some suit trousers, a shirt and tie, and he'd sell eggs. And the whole idea that you would you know, it's that thing of being equipped and feeling smart, and but also practical for work. So I kind of like a bit of a romantic to those ideas of those guys that dig a road in a suit jacket. You know, I like that. I like that. And that's where I've tried to create things that you could work in, especially the modern workplace has changed so much now, you know. Yeah. I mean, my job, partly sat at a desk like this, and then partly shifting boxes and preparing orders to go out. And I like the idea that you can wear a garment that's fit for purpose, I guess.
Yeah. No, that's interesting. I do like those old-timey photos as well. When I was working on in a cricket bat factory, my job to kind of chop up wood and make clefts for the bat. So right. I'd get to see these old photos of the old people that did it back in the day with the kind of axe before we had like bandsaws or anything like that. It was all done by axe. things. And I remember looking at these photos and I said to my boss, crikey, these guys are dressed better than I am on a Saturday night out. I mean, how is that working? And they're chopping up wood for a living. I mean, it's just nuts, right?
Yeah. Exactly. Now, that's what we've tried to do is give the, because we use quite a heavy cotton. We reinforce all the arm, the elbows are reinforced, double. And the idea being that you live in it, and work in it, and wear it. That's what we were trying to do with it.
And just going off the grass a little bit, Paul, but Levi's was originally workwear, wasn't it? Made for the men in the miners that were wearing old denim back in the day?
Spot on, yeah. I mean, the original denim came from the old sailcloths from the, Denims is in France, the sailcloth that they used there. All the miners took in California, took the sailcloth and started making pants out of it because it was that heavy duty for the mining, for the gold mining. And that's how Levi's came about. Yeah, you're spot on there.
Yeah. I think I remember that. And also, lastly, just to finish off on the designs, I've only just had this thought, maybe you can help me out on it, but workwear, whenever I've worn workwear, I've always found the fit to be kind of like loose and comfortable, nothing's kind of slim fitting. Do you find that easier thing to have to sell on a website, for example, because people aren't always confused about sizing, you don't often get a lot of returns?
That's interesting. I've not thought about it from that point of view of is it an easier garment to retail because it's less tailored, I guess, is the question, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
I suppose it is. And I think there's only a certain type of person who's really interested in workwear, It kind of fits a certain person or type of people, and they generally, I would imagine, are less concerned of tailored cut.
Yeah,
but yeah, it probably is. It's interesting. If I've not thought about it like that, is it an easier garment to retail?
Because when I worked in an independent retailers, we had a number of brands under our umbrella, and we'd get questions all the time before people would hit the purchase button of, what's the sizing like on this? Do I need to buy up a size, down a size? I mean, famously, Superdry was just a nightmare for us because they make garments twice as small as you'd actually receive. So you'd always have to tell them to go up a size. And then that would confuse them. They'd be like, well, then how does that work for the jeans? Is it the same? Do I need to go up a size in the jeans? Anyway, so you had to really hold people's hands through the process if they're buying online. So I just figured that if workwear was that kind of more forgiving of a fit, that people wouldn't have to wrestle with that,
It's definitely more forgiving of a fit. And it's the idea about layering, the idea that you can, sling a T-shirt, a sweatshirt, and under a work shirt. That's the idea that you can layer it up for warmth. I've not thought of it. Is it easy? I would have thought it is a much easier garment to retail. But I don't think the return rates are the return rates are below. I think you're probably right. I've not actually looked at it like that. I think you're right. Yeah.
We'll have to crunch some numbers down there. I'll show you all of my old returns from 10 years ago and we'll compare some stats. What's next for you, Paul? Tell me a little bit about the brand as it is and how you see it for the next couple of months. Pandemic, people opening up, shops coming open. What's in store for you guys?
Yeah, I mean, we launched formally in February last year, so it was we've had a great year, really. All things considered, we got a UK agent. We've opened up numerous wholesale accounts throughout last year, which was wonderful because I didn't expect to do much at all. But we did pick up quite a number of wholesale accounts. Web business is building slowly, but we're starting to get our tribe of followers and through Instagram and so on. We're starting to find our tribe of people, which is good. So since Christmas, I think things have been, certainly in the last few days, things feel much better. But I think the first part of January, February, they say it's always darkest before the dawn. And I think that's certainly true of this last couple of months. You know, I think people have been, you know, battening down the hatches and wondering if they're going to get have a job at the end of all this. And there's a lot, but I think, you know, from the budget and, you know, the fact that it's lighter in the day, the vaccine rollout and so on, I think things are feeling more optimistic. And I'm optimistic for this year. Perhaps from May onwards, that we're going to start to see some spending, some pent-up frustration and getting out there and putting some money and going crazy for a bit. And then I think it'll settle down again. For us as a brand, we've kept things very tight this year. We've not expanded the range too much, purely because I didn't think we'd have the audience for it. But for the longer term, I'm interested in, I'd love to do some wool garments and finding some recycled wool. And I'm interested in doing wool, again, back to the blazers and so on, some heavy-duty, bigger wool jackets, blazers. I've got some nice organic corduroy on the horizon.
Oh, now you're talking.
So I've got some lovely organic corduroy, which we're working on, which we should have for August, September time this year. But apart from that, we're keeping it quite tight. Keep the range under control, make sure we've got some good depth in stock for retailers and build from there, really. But we've been lucky.
And people wanting to know where they can shop, obviously online, but you have concessions all over the country as well. In London, do you have any shops in London in terms of... Yeah.
We have Meat Bernard is one of our stockists. He's in Dulwich. We have Natter Jack's down in Kingston. We have in Brighton. We've got a couple in Brighton. I think the two in London.
Great.
Brighton. We've got a couple of accounts down in Brighton. I think we've got about 24 wholesale accounts at the moment. We seem to be falling into this nice area of the kind of concept retailing, the people who are selling a bit of homeware, a cafe bar, and, you know, the garments are sitting well in there, which is really interesting, because I think that's the way retail's going to develop. It's going to have to do, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's
got to be an experience, I think, for people to go and maybe grab a few other things at the same time and not just coffee. We were talking off air about how I went into a retail shop the other day for the first time, it felt like in a year. And you're right. I think people miss going out, and it's not just for tailors. You know, we'd always assume that it's an experience shopping for clothes at tailors, because you'd sit down, have a bourbon, get measured, you know, get your balls fluffed. But, you know, it's all kind of menswear. It's every shop, you know, it's feeling the garments, trying them on. I mean, I'm a weird oddball size. I mean, like you've got kind of chunky legs and not much else going on. So I can't buy jeans online. I can't buy trousers because it all comes up really crazy. So I have to physically see them and try them on. And it's just driving me nuts that I can't even, I've been wearing one pair of jeans, but it feels like the last year. Anyway, I digress. Paul, thanks so much for coming on, mate. Uskies.com, a place where people can shop. And on Instagram, we can follow you guys at Uskies_clothing. Where does the name come from, by the way?
Well, it comes from the name of our fridge in the office. It's quite a long story, but essentially the fridge was called Husky. And a very, very long, drawn-out story, but we ended up with Huskies. And the reason we wanted that was we needed something that was that didn't really kind of mean anything. Because we sell, you know, we sell in France, we sell in Germany, we sell in America, and we wanted something that was kind of meaningless.
Nice. No, I like it.
It's one of those. It's kind of happened, and it's there, and it's growing, and it's taking on its own meaning now, which is good. And you could do, you know, but yeah, that's the truth of it. It came from the fridge in the office.
I love it even more now. The oddballness of the name is kind of reflected in the obscurity of its origin. So yeah, digging that. Anyway, Paul, I'll let you go. Thanks again for jumping on, mate. Pleasure talking to you.
Good to talk to you, Pete. Thanks very much for your time.
And thank you, Paul. Thank you for tuning in to this episode of the Menswear Style Podcast. If you like what you hear, why not leave a review? It does help my ego, especially. Don't forget to check out the show notes for this episode and all content pertaining to fashion, watches, grooming, lifestyle over at www.menswearstyle.co.uk. And we're on the social at Menswear Style. And if you want to be a guest on the show, tell us about your brand and your journey. You can email us here at info@menswearstyle.co.uk. And until next time. Thank you.